and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Maureen J. St. Germain, whose book today that we'll be discussing is called Waking Up in 5D, A Practical Guide. This is really a very interesting book for me because we've been noticing around here anyway, in the surgery center, that things are different this year, and some very strange phenomena are occurring. And I think that Maureen has done a great job of helping us understand dimensional shifts, because I think we all go through them throughout the day, and they're not real easy to understand, though. And I think that her book is very unique in helping us understand how we do these dimensional shifts and then how what we can do to stay in the higher dimensions, where we can create, co-create much better and have a much easier life. Maureen is a practical mystic. She's an author and teacher with workshops and clients worldwide. She is expert in personal development and spiritual awakening, and she's taught throughout Europe, Canada, U.S., Egypt, Taiwan, China, Australia, Scotland, and Japan. So basically, she is bringing in what I feel is fairly new information. I've been doing this radio show for over 20 years and know pretty much everything out there in terms of spirituality. So I'm real pleased to present her material today because I think it's going to help people understand some of the things that have been happening over the last year and a half. Welcome, Maureen. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm delighted to be part of your program. Thank you.
So you want to give the listening audience a little bit of your background and how you came to write the book?
Sure. I worked in the corporate world up until about 25 years ago, and then I worked double. You know, I held my corporate job and started working, giving seminars, and my original seminars were on sacred geometry and meditation. I began teaching a very well-known meditation known as the Merkaba, and my reputation grew, and I got invited in all those places. None of them did I try to make it happen. They always came to me. And then my book got translated into Russian and Italian and now Chinese, and so I have grown the audience. And what has happened in the process is I found that each class that I would teach, more information would come forward. And it was almost like each class was building on the previous class. And it got to a point where I was keeping really good notes. So the earlier books that I wrote kind of hinted at what was happening. But this book, I wanted to really, like, help people get their arms around what is happening around here and why are things the way they are. And also, how can we be ahead of that curve? You know, if you know that the rules are changing, you know, like if you go to another country and you start driving and you don't know the rules of the road in that country, you know, you might make a mistake, you might not understand why people are behaving the way they do, and, you know, you kind of learn by default or by watching other people, and even then you're not sure. So this book, my idea was to give people a heads up on what's happening so they could, first of all, unhook from their expectation that things are messed up, and instead realize, oh, we're in a different game. No wonder things are different. And, you know, that's a big, like, mind shift, just to shift. When we go to a foreign country and we drive, we get it. You know, like when I drive in the UK, I know that I have to be on the other side of the road. And I do pretty well most of the time until I come into those traffic circles. And then I have to be careful. So there's, you know, little areas that we all need a little boost on. And what I began to realize is that I was so plugged in terms of awareness in the consciousness that I didn't recognize that I was adapting to the new version of the reality while everyone else around me was still struggling until I started hearing their stories, and then I would get answers for them. Sometimes it came through in the Akashic Records, sometimes it came through in classes, and sometimes it just came through in conversation.
Well, one thing we have trouble understanding is the difference between dimensions. I was reading a book. Actually, the book was never published. And I asked the author why he never published the book. It was pretty much channel material and dimensional things. And he said, because I kept getting more information, so I never figured it out. Yeah, you know, I never actually published it. But it is on his website. But he says that the difference between dimensions has to do with the precessional rate of the atom. And what that means is that the lower dimensions, the atoms are closer together, but in the higher dimensions, they're just further apart. So you describe the dimensions as like Russian dolls, you know, one within each other, which is true. So you can think of the higher dimensions as just the same, but the molecules or the in the atom and molecules, they're further apart because the what he said, the precessional rate of the atom was further apart in higher dimensions.
Well, one of the things that became very clear to me is that when I was fifth dimensional, I was still observing the reality that everyone else was. And
right.
So one of the things I became aware of is that when you slide into fifth dimension, and practically everyone has by now, we've all had a taste of it, even if we didn't know we were there,
mm-hmm.
What happens is you have perception of the world around you, and you do not realize that you are at a higher state than everyone around you. And so
right.
One of the things that the book does is identify markers to help you recognize when you are fifth dimensional, and then on the other side of it, to help you be proactive so you can consciously choose to stay in that state, which is much more blissful and much more fun, really.
Right. It's like a walking meditation is what it is. It's very, very pleasant.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the ways that people get to discover that they are fifth dimensional when they don't realize they are is when you're sitting in traffic and
mm-hmm.
you're waiting for the light to change.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're a second or third car back. And, you know, the light changes. No one moves. The people don't start walking and the cars don't start moving. And you're kind of looking around going, what's going on? And then maybe
mm-hmm.
3 seconds go by and then the cars start to move. What's
right.
happening is at fifth dimension, you're actually able to perceive the reality before third. And that's one of the ways you know that you are more anchored in fifth dimension. You're still seeing what's happening in third. You're interacting with third.
Mm-hmm.
But third doesn't know about fifth. Third doesn't have that fifth dimensional experience. And that's a
right.
big difference.
So why don't you start with the 13-dimension concept and then explain, because the book is primarily about third, fourth, and fifth dimensions, because that's what we're actively working in right now. But the idea that there are 13 dimensions.
Yes, and a lot of people, I'll use the word stop at eight. And I was very clear that those higher dimensions are real and they are part of creation, although they are not part of what I will call the human expression. In other words, those higher dimensions, the 9 through 12, are representing the creative energies of Source, where we're all from. So ultimately, we do have a connection to that, but our identities are merged more into the lower dimensions, and they're more merged into like oneness or one being than they
mm-hmm.
are in the lower dimensions. So third dimension, everybody kind of has an idea what that is, and it's very focused about the human and the human experience, and it's focused in the physical world. And our job here is to learn how to balance polarity and to not be, to experience polarity without being attached to polarity, which is, mm-hmm. you know, pretty difficult. You know, just think of the thing about, I want to know the best whatever, or I want to know the answer. And
mm-hmm.
in third, you know, it's like, well, there's pros and cons, and, you know, there's always choices. And then
mm-hmm.
fourth dimension is a zone of transformation. And that means that it's more like a portal than it is a place. And my joke is no one goes to Grand Central Station to spend the night. If you do, it's an accident. You don't choose to go there to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with an airport. You go there to get somewhere else. So it's a portal
right.
or a way to achieve another expression. And there's a lot more to that, but that's like the short version. And then fifth dimension, I like to tell people, is the closest thing to heaven that any religious teaching you've ever encountered has. So
mm-hmm.
it's the perfected human, the perfected concept of what it is you're trying to do with yourself. and with your emotions and with your heart. But once you achieve that level of balance, then right away you're ready to work with others in group environments and group experiences. And that's when we move into the sixth dimension. Now, what's interesting is each of us have expressions in the fifth dimension already, and then we have expressions of ourselves in higher dimensions as well. So you might have a six-dimensional self that is feeding you information that you don't realize you're getting. But sixth dimension is the concept of what forms matter, what forms ideas. And it is the most common place that we go to in the dream time. So that generally is something outside of ourselves, yet it represents a realm of physical possibilities that we don't have here. And then seventh dimension is more of an introspective space. So it is a place of original thinking and original ideas. And in terms of the elements of it, this is where pure tone comes in, and there's a quality of precision. I dare say that you, as a surgeon, have a very prominent seventh dimensional self that is influencing you here, where you're at and what you're doing. You couldn't possibly without that, I don't think. And then eighth dimension is where we become conscious of our presence in a group, in our interaction in a group environment, yet we're able to move as one, like a school of fish. Ninth dimension is a collection of dissimilar groups, like a solar system has different celestial bodies and different people. And so you get a much broader sense of what that is. Now, one of the things I did in the book is I explained this in terms of a concept that people could easily wrap their brain around. And think of the woman who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She first experienced a loss in 3D, a very physical loss. Her daughter died. And then she went through an emotional trauma, and that trauma drove her to make a decision to help others so that the others would not have to go through what she went through. So that's when she became fifth dimensional in her choice to try and serve others and to recognize a fifth dimensional recognition is that you want things to be as good for everyone else as they are for you. And then she formed a collective, if you will, of other like-minded individuals who would support her in this group. And then they became an organization where they began offering training, and that's the seventh dimensional expression, where they went introspective and developed systems that would help others. And then in eighth dimension, the comparison would be, well, then they went out to like AAA and other organizations where they became actively involved in outward focus groups that were similar in their mission in terms of safe driving. And then they went back into a inner awareness that they could actually influence larger groups, like when they spoke before Congress and things like that. So that kind of gives you a broad brushstroke of the third through ninth. And then the upper dimension, so the upper creation realm, involves higher beings that we are all part of. And it is the creation realm. And so on 10th, we see the divine blueprint. And we see the actual plans for the planet and for humanity and for, let's say, the construction of the Great Pyramid or anything like that. The 11th dimension is a place of introspection, but broad basis. So it's where the Akashic Records are. It is also a place where the Archangel Metatron works with the archangels at that level of interacting with humans and, again, being part of a inner training or an inner awareness. And then the 12th dimension is this awareness that we are all one and that we're moving, into a collective consciousness that is greater than when we left because of our experiences. And then the 13th, this is so funny, when I started asking, well, is there a 13th dimension? I was told yes. And then I said, well, is there anyone in it? And I was actually told, well, the construction crew is there, which I thought was just hilarious because it was not what I was expecting in terms of an answer. So, I think the 13th dimension represents the next round, that we're getting ready.
Yeah.
And if we're getting ready, that means that we're making, the success is assured, because you wouldn't start building mm-hmm. the new construction, if you will, without that. And that's one of the principles that I think is so important for people to understand. We have so many unseen helpers, the extraterrestrials mm-hmm. of the light, the ascended masters, our own angels and guides, and they're the system that we are in wants to advance, but it cannot advance any further until we move to another level where we're no mm-hmm. longer in this creation zone that we've created thus far. We have to evolve out of that, and then everything gets to move forward.
And one of the things that we were told in meditation was that every person who creates a new system of, say, anything, you know, medicine, law, government, storytelling, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter what it is. But when you create a higher level system, you don't, it's interesting, you don't even have to teach it to other third dimensional people. Because you've created that structure in the higher dimensions, it becomes accessible for everyone.
Yes. Yes.
And that just blows my mind. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. Well, you know, it is mind-blowing, but at the same time, when you look at history, you know, there was more than one person that invented a telephone. It was just Alexander Graham Bell who got to the patent office first.
That's always the way it is, too. Multiple people are given information at the same time.
Or
from the higher realm.
You could even say they're accessing it at the same time.
Accessing it at the same time.
And you know what's
yeah.
even funnier is when you start to look at the multiple versions of you, it might even be just another version of you that's doing the same search. You know, mm-hmm. in the early days when I first started writing and I got very clear about, you know, multiple versions of me and that there was a lot of me out there, you know, a lot of versions of me out there, I remember thinking, well, I want to be the first one to get published, and that would get me up in the morning. And then one day it occurred to me that maybe another version of me was already published. It just cracked me up.
Well, that's what I heard. I have a book that I'm supposed to write, but I hear I've already written it.
Yeah. And so you don't have to worry about it. It's taken care of.
Interesting, it's not safe to write it in the third dimension.
It takes that whole thing from Mickey Mouse and Fantasia and the broom mm-hmm. to a whole new height.
Yeah, it does. But it's very true. I mean, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do in this lifetime because they've been over it with me again and again and again. So, you know, but I just can't do it right now. You know, it's like, it's not time. So, so we ask questions. Okay, well, what's my fifth dimensional self doing, or what's my seventh dimensional self doing? And it's very interesting. I mean, we truly are at many different levels simultaneously.
Yes.
It's just very difficult for people to wrap their heads around that. And especially because so much of the time when we're third dimensional, we really don't appreciate that the higher dimensional selves can see the lower dimensional selves, but not the other way. We don't
right.
see up. We only see
right.
down.
Right. And I think also we've been programmed to think that we're it and we're the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
when you start to accept that there might be another version of you. And I have some really funny stories in the book about multiple versions of the same person. You know, the mm-hmm. the two Susans who, one was a white woman and one was a black woman with the same birthday. You know, they mm-hmm. show up at one of my classes. They both want to sponsor me. 6 months later, they're both on a flight to Mexico City from Atlanta in first class, in the same row, one on each window.
Wow.
You know, you just have to laugh. You know, or two men both born in Tokyo and one living in mm-hmm. Seattle, one living in New York, and I put them together on a trip to Egypt with me, and they come to me and say, we think we're the same soul. And, of course, mm-hmm. I knew it when I put them together, but I was, you know, letting them discover it.
Right.
What I have found is that most people that are on a proactive spiritual path, you know, your listeners, are actually meeting other versions of themselves. And those other versions of themselves are stepping in to help each other. Because ultimately, mm-hmm. it's one action. So if another version of me comes in to help me edit my book and then drops out mm-hmm. and does nothing for the rest of her life, maybe that's all I needed was another version of me to do that piece. And then
right.
that was sufficient. and then we can keep going. And then, of course, the antithesis of this was the version of me that stole from me, and was that a theft? And the joke is, how can it be a theft if it was another version of me?
Right. Well, you know, it's all just learning. I mean, it's all just figuring out. And I love the way you write the book. You know, when something bad happens, we had something bad happen here yesterday, but I knew it wasn't bad. Because I kind of like heard that, no, this is really good. But my manager was just like all upset, you know. And so today, of course, having read your book, I said the little affirmation that, you know, let there be heaven on earth today for us and the clinic and everything. And then a miracle happened, just a miracle. And everybody's just delighted that that bad thing happened because it was really great. Yeah. So there you go. You know, never judge anything. Ask why it happened.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and you know, it's such a simple affirmation to say, I'm asking for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I come in contact with. And in the book, I actually say, and everyone I'm in contract with, because that means anybody I'm not talking to today, but I'm in a contract with, they're being covered as well. And the amazing thing is, you know, the first time this happened, I thought, wow, you know, I had done that as an antidote because of a word that slipped out of my mouth that I don't normally use. And then, you know, I thought, wow, that's amazing. You know, what caused all this good stuff to happen? And the answer was, well, that phrase you used. So I thought, well, the next time I have a day that's really intense, I'm going to do it again. And then the second time I thought, you know what? I'm not going to wait till I have an intense day.
No.
I'm going to answer that every day.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we are learning that life is not quite what we were taught it was. Life
that's
is
right.
not a struggle. Life is not, you know, suffering. Life is not you know, just the dog eat dog world, the competitive thing. Of course, I never really believed that, but you know, the point is that there are different dimensional awarenesses, and if you operate from the higher awareness, then life is actually pretty easy.
Yes, it is. It truly
is. I mean, even though difficult things may be happening in your life, even though really bad things look like they're happening, you can do it with ease.
That's right. That's right. You know, something as little as somebody, you know, doing something that you don't think is appropriate, and then later being able to kind of laugh and say, you know, your five-year-old was out yesterday when such and such happened. It's kind of like you're not even mad about it. You're just pointing it out, you know, so that person could be aware without being critical or pointing a finger and everyone laughs, you know. It's great.
Yeah, and that's explain the role of the ego in the third dimension and how it shifts as you go higher up, fourth and fifth level.
Well, the ego is used to help us get established in the 3D world, in the physical manifestation world, to keep us safe and to help us achieve whatever it is we're, you know, wanting to achieve. Mm-hmm. And it sets situations up to create those opportunities. But the ego is only using the past to predict the future. So one of the things that happen is when you start to work with your higher self, and there is a protocol in the book to do that, when you start to work with your higher self, what happens is, you know, the ego wants to help make that decision, whatever the decision is. And I tell people, take the time and do your due diligence. You know, if you're going to buy a new car, go look at all the cars, go look at all the opportunities, and then step back and ask your higher self. Because the higher self involves both the mind and the heart. And I joke around that the ego and your will are kind of unified in their purpose, and your higher self is unified in its purpose. And if the two of them come together, they get married, and it's a marriage made in heaven, because marriage is made in heaven on earth, because we're now allowing ourselves to be led by our wisdom channel, but we're not ignoring the 3D self or the 3D situation that we might be facing. And, you know, if you don't take the time to do the due diligence ahead of time before asking your higher self, say, well, you know, I've got a good higher self. Let me just ask my higher self. The problem with that is then the ego jumps in and challenges the decision and puts doubt in, whereas if you had done the due diligence, that voice is heard. So the ego doesn't need to win. The ego needs to be heard. And that's what people don't realize.
Yeah, in the Course in Miracles, you know, the exercise book where you start with day one and go all year, you know, the whole thing is to get the ego, the idea that nothing in this room means anything. You know, everything, I have assigned the meaning to everything in this room. And then it kind of deprograms you from always going to the past to get meaning for things and you know, being able to accept new meanings rather than completely judging something bad, like, right away, because in the past that was what happened, you know, or that was their habit of doing that.
Yeah.
So it's real interesting that that the Course in Miracles uses that kind of deprogramming to get you to understand what the ego is doing.
Yeah, and, you know, the Course in Miracles also says forgiveness is not necessary. And in this body of knowledge, I actually say the same thing, but I give a different twist to it, because I say forgiveness isn't needed because, in the Course in Miracles, they say because there are no affronts. And when you look at this from a 5D perspective, what happens is you don't need forgiveness because there is no, in a sense, it's the same thing, it's there are no affronts, but it's the idea that in 5D, there are no real judgments, so there is no need for forgiveness, because there is no judgment. You know, the thing about forgiveness, and this is the thing that, you know, like even making people say, I'm sorry, the problem with all of that is that it puts me above whoever I'm telling they need to say I'm sorry. Makes my version of the reality more important, more valuable than whatever your experience was. And so the I am sorry, I mean, you know, aside from the obvious P's and Q's thing that we do and, you know, to be gracious to one another in various, you know, social situations, that business of I'm sorry requires me to hold myself in a standard and then make you make my standard. So, you know, both of us are being held to a standard that maybe doesn't work for us anymore.
I think it's easier to, if you're going to work with forgiveness, to think of it as an energy within you that you want to release so that you don't get sick or have emotional pain or, you know, mental, you know, problems.
Yeah.
Because,
well,
like cancer is always about victims, okay? It's the cancer victims, right? Well, when you actually understand cancer, it's a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, into an organ of lowered energy. So if you can forgive, if an emotional is part of the cause, because it can be anything that lowers the energy, from electromagnetic, geopathic stress, infectious, almost anything infectious can lower the energy. So, and radiation can lower the energy. But if it's emotional, it has to do with releasing the energy that made you feel like a victim. And like, for say, if you're a right-handed woman and your husband has an affair or your uncle sexually molests you, it's somebody in a position of power who is abusing their power and not nurturing you. You know, they should be taking care of you, and instead they're making you a victim. So what you do is you release that energy, and then the cancer can be thrown back into the fourth dimension because the energy of the, say, the left breast now is at a higher level.
Right.
So that's how that works. It's, so forgiveness for me is not pardoning. It's not, you know, saying that I forgive you for what you did wrong to me. What I say is, no, it's releasing an energy within me, really having nothing to do with you. It's just that I don't want to get breast cancer. You know, it's like, it's more selfish.
Interesting. You know, in relationship, I often say to people, you know, don't apologize. Just decide to be different.
Right, right, yeah.
And that changes the energy,
true.
Too. Because then I don't have to, you know, it's things happen, you know, somebody steps on your toe, whatever, you know, it's a choosing to be different instead of just, you know, acknowledging whatever's going on. It's very cool.
It is. So how does somebody know that they're fifth dimensional? What are the signs?
One of the markers is that you feel benevolent towards everyone around you. Another marker is that when you make a phone call or you're interacting with others, the interactions, even if they're demanding, there's still an element of love and kindness and compassion. And we've all had conversations with our bank or some other institution, you know, that perhaps feels like they might have more control over us,
mm-hmm.
where we might get stressed out. And yet, when you're fifth dimensional, you're simply stating what you need, and the other mm-hmm. person's being cool. And it's like, even if you don't get what you want, there's still that harmony that's there. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the number one sensation, is you have this sense of harmony about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is you wake up in a good mood. And that's one of the things I tell people. Just announce when you go to bed at night, I am waking up in fifth dimension tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so when you wake up, you're in a good mood. So even if you don't feel so good, you still have a good mood. You know, maybe you have a headache or some little thing that's bothering you, but the vibration of contentment and joy and bliss run through you in such a way that it's unmistakable. And you're able to laugh about the discomfort or the things that don't work. They don't bother you. And that's because, you know, we're still dealing with third-dimensional stuff, you know, because it's mm-hmm. still here.
And what about fourth-dimensional? What is that like?
Fourth dimension is when you are in a big state of emotion. So mm-hmm. a lot of people have very intense spiritual experiences when they're fourth-dimensional, and that's because the fourth dimension is a much faster vibration. And like the energy in the movie, What Dreams May Come, when Robin Williams went to the lower dimension to get his wife, she was creating that energy, but it was an energy that held her because of her own self-judgment, her own self-guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And so it existed, and he had to move through that path. So when a person is fourth dimensional, they're very often in a deep state of emotion. Now, what happens when we slip between third and fifth is we move through fourth very quickly. So mm-hmm. you don't have to have a big state of emotion, but when you're stuck in fourth, you're either stuck in a, you know, a pity party, or you might be in a blissful state, and that bounces you right up to fifth dimension. One of the things I know about fourth is that there's a vortex quality, and it has either a driving down, like quicksand, or a driving up, like the tornado. And then mm-hmm. you move right into fifth, which is this yummy, cooperative, content state.
And when we were talking earlier, I was telling you that many of us are experiencing disappearance of items that then reappear. So
yes.
I was happy that your book explained that.
Yes, well, you know, it's a very funny thing. One of the things that I figured out fairly early was that we could ask our guidance or our higher self questions, and mm-hmm. that the questions could be answered. But of the five interview questions that were taught in school, who, what, when, where, why, and how, all of them are identifying a piece of information so that we can go take an action. For example, mm-hmm. who ate the cookies? Well, then we're going to go to the kids that ate the cookies. When were the cookies eaten? Well, if they were eaten at 5:30, they're probably not going to eat dinner. You know, why were they eaten? Well, because we didn't put fruit out for them. You know, I mean, there's lots of answers mm-hmm. that are very 3D and very mundane so that we can then take that information and go solve the problem. But mm-hmm. when you ask one question, what is going on, the dynamic is such that you could hear the entire story. And so what mm-hmm. happened to me is I had been teaching my students, you know, when your stuff disappears, you can ask for it to come back, which we started doing right away. But mm-hmm. then when I asked where did my stuff go, whatever it was that was missing, the answer was always the same, you know, that I was in a higher dimension. And initially mm-hmm. I thought it was my stuff that was moving and that I was just, you know, practicing with my material objects, sending them ahead somehow. And then mm-hmm. one day, after I'd been teaching my students, you know, there's really only one question to ask your higher self, and that is, what's going on? And that also came from an accidental experience where I asked that question and I got the full story. I began teaching that, and the students started asking that question. And when something of mine disappeared, and I asked the question, what's going on? The answer caught me by surprise, because the answer was, Maureen, you're in a higher dimension when you put it down. And that had not occurred to me. I never realized that it was me that was moving interdimensionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't
either.
And I
realized that if it was happening to me, it was happening to everybody else that was in my class.
Right.
Because everybody was agreeing, yeah, stuff's disappearing. We'd like to know what's going on ourselves. So that basically helped me like open up to the possibilities that I was experiencing more than one dimension at the same time. And then mm-hmm. that led to the next awareness and the next awareness. And part of what happens when you read a book like this is that your ability, your capacity to comprehend the new game that we're all playing,
mm-hmm.
the capacity to understand it increases because you have a new framework with which to hold that new data set. And it is that which allows you then to become part of this bigger picture of this massive change that's happening across humanity and across all creation. And, you know, this is something that people also don't understand. That's a very far-reaching thing, and that is everything that we're doing here on 3D is being impacted across all creation. Already for the one reason I explained earlier, which is, you know, all of creation is depending upon us so that we can all move en masse to the next level. But the other piece is we all carry a God spark in us that not all other parts of creation have. And so we have a direct infusion. And I think this occurred when a lot of the DNA altering and all that stuff was going on the planet. God herself or himself, you know, stepped in and said, let me put a piece of me in and see what happens. You know, direct mm-hmm. connection. And so as a result, the energy of who we are is directly impacting all of creation because we represent a piece of it.
I think that's true. I think that is explains a lot of, about what's going on. Now, in your book, and near the end, you've made some statements that we've also got confirmation in meditation about.
Oh, great.
And it has to do with the future of the planet and some of the things that are looming, like the possibility of World War III and the possibility of, you know, other some pretty bad things happening, that your information is that these aren't going to happen.
That's right. That's right. There is absolutely no way that this planet is going to have another world war. It will simply not be allowed. And, you know, there's been a lot of interference or intervention, depending upon how you mm-hmm. look at it, with ETs, benevolent ETs, who have stepped in and literally pulled the plug on various military exercises.
Right.
So even the so-called exercises that we're hearing about today are simply mm-hmm. posturing. They're just lip service or dressing up. There is no way there can be mm-hmm. any damage from any of those kinds of weapons or mass destruction or world war. It will simply not be tolerated. And those so-called weapons are already decommissioned, whether we want them to be decommissioned or not. And, you know, the military knows this. They know they don't
right.
have any power.
They do, yeah. Anytime but, anybody tried to set off a nuclear weapon, something would happen and the electronics would get fried.
Yeah,
and
even,
we
yeah.
asked about North Korea in meditation the other day, and we heard, nope, no, I mean, you've got the evidence of the earthquake and you have the evidence of a landslide, but no atomic weapon went off, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it wasn't allowed, and you're absolutely right. The Syrians especially have made it clear in the UN that there will be no allowance of nuclear weapons, and they're allowed to do that. And the interesting reason is because a nuclear explosion affects the higher dimensions, so
right.
it's the non-interference rule is null and void, which is,
right.
is very interesting. Yeah,
right.
So
right.
you know, I think that the whole thing, the militaries do know, and Putin especially has been working with higher dimensional extraterrestrials to show some of our people in our military how the technology that they have renders us pretty helpless.
Right.
So, you know, that's why we can't go to war, because of the demonstrations of this.
And,
it's pretty clear that it's just not going to work, you know.
Right. And that's very exciting because then it empowers you and I and John mm-hmm. Q. Public to take a stand and move into our power because we are not helpless. And that's right. the other thing that's so important in this book, and that is that we accept that we have the power to transform our world right where we are at, and that we are in the place of co-creation. And it is so important that we envision a future that we want, not only for our mm-hmm. own personal benefit, but for the benefit of the entire planet. And that impacts all of creation. And it's at every single level. You know, I have dealt with an allergy that comes and goes. And whenever I come back to San Diego, where I have one of my two homes, I get a little stuffed up. You know, I have to take an antihistamine. And if I don't, I can, you know, you can hear it in my voice. Mm-hmm. And I was in a session with the guides that I work with, which are the Council of Nine. And they basically mm-hmm. said, get over it and use your tools. You don't have to move. Just cracks me up when I think about it because... okay, fine, I'll use my 3D tools and my 4D tools. And my and what's really funny is when I was in that session, there was no evidence of any physical anything. And yet, as soon mm-hmm. as I come out of it, then it hits me again. It's so funny. So we all have our 3D stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Well, I broke my arm in 2006, and it would not heal. I had osteoporosis so bad, it was not healing. You know, month after month, nothing was working. And so I was guided to go to Hawaii, and one of my spiritual teachers said, oh, something's going to happen in Hawaii so that your arm heals. And it did. It was spiritual surgeons. I felt the whole thing. I mean, I couldn't see them because they were in a higher dimension, but I felt the entire procedure where they put my bone back together, and it healed. So I had to have spiritual surgery to heal this thing. Otherwise, I wasn't going to come back as a surgeon.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of that movie about a man who actually, you know, did mess up his surgeon hand, and then I can't think of what the movie is called, but I'm sure you've seen it. And then, you know, went on a spiritual quest, you know, to learn things.
Mm-hmm.
Did you figure out why you needed to go to Hawaii to have the surgery? Was it because you would be in a much more relaxed state and you weren't doing, you know, your everyday drama stuff?
I actually went to Hawaii twice during those the 4 months I was off. I think it was because of where I was astrologically. I was where Neptune was in my chart, and I couldn't think straight. I felt like I was on drugs, but I wasn't on any narcotics or anything. I said to my astrologer, I said, why do I feel like I'm on drugs? She said, because she pointed out all the Neptune in my chart, and the only place I felt normal was on the Big Island.
Uh-huh.
Well, and you know why, if you've been there. It's very grounding. So
yeah.
I spent 4 weeks out of those 4 months on the Big Island. And it was on the Big Island that I had I assume it's because I was supposed to go there because that was the most healing place on Earth for me at the time.
Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. And Hawaii is very special, and the Big Island especially so, I think.
Yeah,
that's
it's
fabulous.
An incredibly spiritual place.
Mm-hmm.
The spirits are all over the place.
Yeah.
They're very vocal too. It's funny.
Yeah. So one of the things that came through in this process were the dragons. And you haven't asked me about the dragons, but I'd like to say a little something about the dragons. They are fourth dimensional beings that are on a very high plane. They are mm-hmm. elementals, but not like the elementals that we have, like the gnomes and the fairies and the elves, because they do have free will. And everyone can call in dragons to help them, and they mm-hmm. can actually ask their dragons for their names. And the last chapter, or the second last chapter in the book that talks about the dragons, gives people a lot of information on why the dragons kind of disappeared out of the reality, and the proof that they were accepted as real beings at one time in our reality, so it's not so far-fetched
mm-hmm,
to be
right.
Working with them. And then some fabulous stories about how they came to influence me and how they came to influence their presence. And it was so funny, when I went to write the dedication, it was literally, I was literally transcribing the information. And even I didn't know, I had an idea of what I was going to say, but that's not what went down on the paper.
Wow.
And so the dedication is, this book is dedicated to dragons who have reappeared on the earth to teach all of us about clarity and to help mm-hmm. each one of us make the best decisions ever. And then I go on to name my favorite dragon, wow. who is also a human. It's kind of cute. So.
Yeah. I want to tell you my dragon story. It was really wild. I wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, which threatened a $1 billion industry. And, of course, that's dangerous to do. And so I was guided to go. I've never bought an antique in my life, but I was guided to go on eBay, and I bought an antique. Actually, I ended up getting a pretty good price for it. I didn't know until I showed it to somebody who was really into antiques. But it was from the U.S.-Iranian diplomats' stuff, okay? And it was a dragon on a tray. It was a gold dragon on a red tray. Now, you know, in the Chinese, the red is mercury.
Right.
You know that. You're not supposed to eat off of it or you can get mercury poisoning. So the red is communication.
Uh-huh.
And the dragon is protection. And I had to buy that to protect myself and to, protect myself with writing the book, because the book was very, very threatening to certain groups. So that tray is the physical manifestation of what my dragons wanted me to do. And I did it, and I think that I'm still alive today, so obviously it worked. Now, when I was reading your book, I asked the name of my dragon, because I had never done that before, and I kept hearing Pendragon, which I don't know what that means. Do you have any idea?
Well, Pendragon is a name, yeah. Pendragon is a name, and
uh-huh.
Pendragon is also the name of the father, I believe, of Guinevere in the story of Camelot.
Okay.
You might look it up in that context.
Right.
But your dragon may have given you his or her name, and what you might want to do is ask your dragon to give you an additional secret name, because you've just announced it to the world, and you don't want everyone to be calling in your dragon,
right.
who has offered his or her service to you.
Yeah.
But,
well, I think Pendragon might be a type of dragon. I mean, do you think it's a type of...
I don't think so. I truly don't. And the
okay.
reason I say that is because my dragons have also given me names that have the word dragon in them.
Okay.
And so I have a feeling...
It's probably the name of the dragon, yeah.
Yeah, probably the name of the dragon. What you want to do now is say, okay, give me an additional title with it so I can specify just
sure.
you. And
okay.
Everybody
right.
else can call it a dragon if they want to call their dragon Pendragon, they can, but it won't be you. You know,
right. Okay. That sounds
because
good.
That's one of the principles that the dragons taught me, and that was, do not share the name of your dragon with anyone, because that gives them the right to call them in.
Okay.
And the dragons love to help us. And by the way, it's mm-hmm. always important for us to ask, how can we help the dragons? And
mm-hmm.
one of the ways, of course, for me was to put their message in the book. And I tell
right.
you, I had to fight with the publisher. The
mm-hmm.
the editor of the book didn't like that. She didn't think it fit. You know, it doesn't belong here. And then,
mm-hmm.
then they tried to make it an appendix, and I said, absolutely not. I put my foot down. Then I called my book agent, and I said, that's it. I'm at the end of my
mm-hmm.
rope here. And she said, don't get so worked up. It's your choice. I'll just have a chat
mm-hmm.
with them. And finally,
right.
they put it where I wanted it, and it was fine. But boy,
yeah.
you know, I had to really fight with them because they didn't get it. Either that or they were under the influence of who knows what, and, you
mm-hmm.
know, there was other stuff going on.
Well, I've always been very close to dragons. I've always, you know, you said you bought a dragon for your son.
Uh-huh.
I've always just had dragons all around me. I'm looking at 6 dragons sitting on the top of my armoire right now. They're just sitting there. So
that's fabulous.
I've always surrounded myself with dragon energy. So,
yeah. Well, those
probably for a good reason, you know,
yeah,
probably for protection.
To your listeners, you know, that's a very, very important icon to help you remember that there are real
mm-hmm.
dragons that are
right.
ready and waiting to assist and
yeah.
to help us make good decisions and to help us follow our heart's desires and our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great.
And that
dragons.
Really. it really helps us to understand that, like you say, dragons being higher dimensional beings. That's real important because
that is
people in Ireland believe with all of their heart in leprechauns and fairies and all of the nature spirits, because in Ireland they interact with them. I mean, many people in Ireland interact with them.
Yes.
And, you know, there's many people in China that interact all the time with the dragon energy. So
yes.
Depending on where you're raised, you may be very close to these fourth dimensional elementals. And really, they're part of your lives.
Yes. And so, this is also true of the, unicorns.
And right. Yeah.
In Scotland, I had someone who was a member of the Secret Mysteries in Scotland tell me that the original icon on the flag of Scotland was a unicorn. And he said, you know, the Scottish were known all over the world as being the strongest and the most fierce fighters in any kind of a battle. They always were able to push back every invader who came along. And he said they always thought that it was the unicorn. And he said, if you have a bunch of fierce guys, why would they put a mythical figure on their flag unless they knew it was real?
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't believe in something, you know, phantasmagorical unless they knew it was real. So I thought that was pretty powerful.
It is. Well, Carolyn Mace talks about the archetypes, and the archetypes are higher dimensional structures through which we learn our lessons, you know, and learn in the, you know, basically we try on different archetypes during different parts of our life, and, you know, we do all the different dances so that we can learn all the parts.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
But one of the signatures of being fifth dimensional, and I know you asked me for a couple of them, is the sense of gratitude, our sense of deep gratitude for the opportunities that are given to us, the opportunities to be in life, the opportunities to experience the interactions that we get to experience, and that gratitude leads us to more gratitude, and it also leads us to appreciate everything, whether it's, you know, a building or a rock. We have such appreciation and such love and appreciation for everything around us that it literally uplifts everything around us, and that keeps us fifth dimensional.
Right. That's right. So would you like to give your contact information?
Yes. It's MaureenSaintGermain.com. MaureenSaintGermain.com is my website. Right now, I don't know when you're going to air this, but I do have a summit going on with lots more information from a lot of amazing teachers, and that will end on the 27th of September. So you can sign up for that, or you can pick it up later if you want. I have always got at least one freebie on my website at all times to help people. And anybody who buys the book, you're going to get more than your money back, because there is a resource page on the back of the book that has a huge selection of free downloads that are available once you have that, you know, that secret web address. So it's MaureenSaintGermain.com, and you can reach me at info@MaureenSaintGermain.com, and that email is probably the easiest way to reach me. So there's no E at the end of my name. It's MaureenSaintGermain.com.
Great. And what sort of teachings are at the summit?
The summit, what I did is I interviewed people like you, actually, who had resources that were even more, they would be fifth dimensional, but they would be radically different than like this mainstream. You know, here's the outline, here's the way that 5D works, and here's how it works, and then, you know, taking that and branching it out even further. So I interviewed 22 teachers who had varying concepts and things to offer to people so that I could expand upon this concept of 5D. And then a lot of people who were doing what I would call very high-level work but hadn't labeled it 5D, mm-hmm. Were able to then make that bridge to what is it in their work that is fifth dimensional and why mm-hmm. that's important.
Right. So well, that's very interesting. Yeah. So people can see it from different
vantage points. One of the teachers, for example, was a teacher by the name of Susan Chomsky, and she explains about the avatars and about ascended masters and what mm-hmm. What is known and what has been observed and documented. And that was a very mm-hmm. interesting discussion because a lot of people don't even realize that there are people who have literally transmutated their body and turned themselves into dust. And if you've never heard anything like that, it's like a big shock until you realize, well, it's just a piece of history mm-hmm. and it's real and it's been documented. Mm-hmm. I think that's very enlightening. Very grounding, and at the same time very enlightening because it's so different.
It would be interesting. I interviewed Susan on this show, and I've been doing Temple of Health for about 22 years now, so it would be interesting to see if we weren't guided to work with the same people.
Yeah. Well, you can check
probably
my list and see. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great interview, and I think that this book is real. This is basically new information from what I've seen before. So the name of the book is Waking Up in 5D, A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation. And Maureen has a website and information that besides the book you can take advantage of. And I would encourage everyone to get the book.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm deeply grateful for the opportunity to speak with your audience and to speak with you and to get to know you. I'm just thrilled.
Well, great. Well, we take care of people with defective breast implants. So if you know anyone who is ill with toxic fibromyalgia, immune problem, and has a breast implant problem, then give us a call or go over to the website and we can help them.
Very good. That's good to know.
Yeah. Not everybody knows that breast implants can cause a lot of health problems, but they certainly can.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Maureen. It's been delightful.
My pleasure.
And we will see everybody next week on Temple of Health Radio Show.